We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. We are 3 months about away from the 2024 election, and it is only heating up. And of course, all of the opposition mudslinging is continuing from both sides. And the latest since the announcement of Governor Tim Walz as the vice presidential running mate for Kamala Harris's Democrat ticket has now devolved a little bit into a mudslinging back and forth over the military service records of both Tim Walz and J.D. Vance. And so it's actually kind of an interesting story, what Tim Walz's experience actually is. And of course, a stolen valor is what's trending on social media, what the media is commenting on. And that's a term generally applied to people who falsely claim military awards or medals that they didn't earn or service that they didn't perform, basically embellishing their military resume. And this clip has resurfaced where Tim Walz, who had spent 25 years in the military when his battalion was deployed to Iraq in 2005, decided to retire. So that event, it's not that he never served in the military, it's that he didn't want to be deployed into Iraq, and so he retired while his battalion went, and so didn't have any active combat experience and deploy to Iraq, which J.D. Vance did. And then on the Democrat side, they're saying, well, J.D. Vance was just a journalist in Baghdad sitting in an air-conditioned office. So does that really count as deployment and military experience? So it's kind of, you know, this back and forth. But this clip has resurfaced on Walz talking about no reciprocal carry and how the weapons of war that he carried while he was in the service, which people are kind of questioning. This is cut six.
We can make sure we don't have reciprocal carry among states, and we can make sure that those weapons of war that I carried in war is the only place where those weapons were at.
So what is he talking about? When did he carry those weapons? Those are all questions that are trending today. And so J.D. Vance responded to the commentary on Walz and the whole stolen valor issue. And this is cut seven.
When the United States of America asked me to go to Iraq to serve my country, I did it. When Tim Walz was asked by his country to go to Iraq, you know what he did? He dropped out of the army and allowed his unit to go without him. What bothers me about Tim Walz is the stolen valor garbage. Do not pretend to be something that you're not. I'd be ashamed if I was him and I lied about my military service like he did.
So let's welcome in our special guest this morning, Representative Tom Tiffany, who is a congressman for the 7th District of the great state of Wisconsin. He's also on the House Judiciary Committee and also the Committee on Natural Resources. So good morning, Representative Tiffany. Always great to have you on.
Yeah, good morning, Jenna.
Yeah, so what do you make, first of all, of Tim Walz as the pick overall? I think there's a lot more that can be debated beyond just kind of this stolen valor mudslinging. Really, his insanely progressive record and how he handled COVID, how he handled the BLM riots. I mean, all of those things, to me, as an American, seem to be a little bit more important to highlight.
Yeah, for sure. So, first of all, the stolen valor thing is really, you know, I think it's similar to being a draft dodger when you look back to the Vietnam era. And that is something that is a very, very serious charge. And I think Walz is going to be answering for this all the way through the election. But the biggest thing for me, so Jenna, if your listeners really take a good look at Western Wisconsin, take a look at Wisconsin, Minnesota, I grew up in the shadow of the Twin Cities in western Wisconsin. My district goes all the way over to the river that borders Minnesota. Those people saw Minneapolis burning. They could see it from Hudson, Wisconsin, across the river. They could see it burning during the riots 4 years ago. St. Croix County, which Hudson is part of in St. Croix County, they had a sheriff's deputy shot to death just in the last year or two as a result of the weak on crime policies in the Twin Cities. A guy came out of the Twin Cities and he got off on a weak sentence and went over and just cold-bloodedly shot a sheriff's deputy in St. Croix County. Those are the type of headlines people in western Wisconsin see regularly about Minnesota. The same decline that's happened in Vice President Harris's San Francisco has happened in Tim Walz's Minneapolis. And those people in western Wisconsin who are going to be crucial voters in this election, they know about Tim Walz. And I got to tell you, Jenna, I think if this is played well by Republicans in Wisconsin, we may have won Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes with Harris's first most consequential decision, picking Tim Walz.
And that's really encouraging. And that does rely, of course, on the GOP playing the messaging well. And do you find it concerning at all that Trump is only scheduled for, you know, the one rally this week, where Harris has, I think, about 10 events scheduled? And it seems like there's not a lot of messaging around all of this coming from the GOP and a really coherent strategy from the Trump campaign to highlight all of these things.
Yeah, so I can't speak for the campaign because we're taking care of our own business here. But I can tell you, those of us in Wisconsin, we just did a call via the Republican Party of Wisconsin with the chairman, with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, myself, the other day. And we laid out very clearly the stark choice that's here. What Vice President Harris did is she doubled down on crazy by picking Tim Walz. She had the opportunity to balance her ticket out and send a message to the American people. Well, she sent a message to the American people. She sent a message that we're doubling down on crazy. What we've seen happen in my San Francisco, this being Vice President Harris, we're going to double down by showing you we're going to get the guy that ruined Minneapolis. And trust me, that city, which used to be one of the most beautiful cities in the United States of America, not unlike San Francisco, is no longer. And those of us that grew up in the shadow of the Twin Cities, that have so many friends and relatives that work in the Twin Cities, we've seen the decline. And if Americans want to continue to see decline, like we've seen with the inflation, with the Biden-Harris administration, the weak on immigration policies that is transforming America, turning us into the countries these people are coming from. If people want to continue on this path, they've got a choice with Harris and Walz. But if you want to have a successful America, if you want to have a great America once again, then we have to change direction and vote for Donald Trump in November.
I'm speaking with Representative Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin, and this does come down to a worldview difference and the path forward for America. And the Democrats want to fundamentally transform America into their version of a Marxist communist utopia. I mean, speaking of just absolutely ludicrous things, the moniker Tampon Tim is also trending because the discussion centers around a Minnesota law that mandates the provision of free menstrual products, including tampons, in school restrooms for boys as well as girls. And we all know the reality is boys don't need those products. But, oh, you know, equality and, oh, this is the whole queer theory that everybody can just identify however they want and reality and facts just don't matter. And then you have on the GOP side, at least an understanding of personal property, that our rights come from God, our creator, that they are concrete, they're articulable, they are reasonably and rationally defined. So this is a worldview contrast. And do you think, Representative Tiffany, that, you know, when we're seeing, and I was just actually sent moments ago a Marquette Law School poll survey that finds that Harris is leading Trump and outperforming him by about 4 points. So 52% of registered voters would like Kamala Harris, and 48% support Trump. Among likely voters, Harris receives 53 and Trump 47. So that's a 6 point difference. Does that indicate that the majority of Americans are buying into a Marxist worldview, that we have a worldview problem in this country?
No, I still believe that we have a conservative country, a center-right conservative country, and this is part of the reason Kamala Harris is not submitting herself to any interviews, because if there was good, tough questioning, people would find out about it. But that's why it's incumbent on us as Republicans and the Trump team to deliver the message of the contrast, because we're going to get no help from the mainstream media. We have to deliver that message to the American people. I mean, just think about it. The Biden-Harris administration has just implemented, if a state did not challenge it, that boys can go into girls' locker rooms. Men can take girls' scholarships away from them in defiance of Title IX. That's being implemented in Wisconsin and Minnesota as we speak. We have to let people know about that. You think about Tim Walz, Minnesota. They now will let people come from any state to have abortions, including underage girls. They made it very explicit that if you want to have an abortion, including in defiance of your parents, sure, without parental consent, go ahead and do it here in Minnesota. They are the extreme of extreme, and we have to deliver that message to the American people so that they understand the clear contrast. Let's go back to 5 years ago, when America was in so much better place. The cost of living was lower. We had a border that was being secured. All of that is gone now. Weak foreign policy now under the Biden-Harris administration. We had a strong America 5 years ago. We have to deliver that message to the American people. And I do believe that we can win these races. And I do believe we are going to win Wisconsin.
And that is really encouraging, and I hope that people will vote their values and vote for the truth and rationality and the American experiment that is predicated on the Judeo-Christian worldview and our rule of law and all of the things that that we have understood as the blessings of liberty, and not allowing the nation to be transformed. And so in just the last couple of minutes I have with you, Representative Tom Tiffany, what are the conversations in Congress about keeping the House majority and how all of this affects down ticket races, because that's incredibly important for voters as well?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So a very slim majority, as you and your listeners know, Jenna, in the House of Representatives. We think we have about 15, approximately 15 pickup opportunities where you have some members that are in Trump districts. You know, you think about Maine, there's a seat in the state of Washington. And if you notice those representatives, I've been looking at the voting board very closely the final couple of weeks of July, and there's about a half dozen of those members on the Democrat side. They have been voting with us Republicans regularly. They're going to have to explain why they are supporting, why they supported Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House in the previous session. Why, in that most consequential vote for Speaker, are they supporting somebody who's so radical? Why they have supported largely the Democrat policies. Now, all of a sudden, in the final couple months before the election, they have found religion, shall we say, and they're voting Republican. But you know what they're going to do. We need to deliver the message, bring those seats home for Republicans. But we think we have a good opportunity in about 15 seats to pick up some seats. Now, we got some tough ones, too, but hopefully we can build that majority back up to a 10 to 15 seat majority in the House, and we should be able to take the Senate.
And that would, if Kamala Harris was elected in November, at least having an opposition majority in the House and the Senate would thwart a lot of the radical agenda that her administration would almost certainly try to push through. And this is why down ticket races absolutely matter. So Representative Tom Tiffany, really appreciate your comments and dropping by. As always, it was great to speak with you. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, the controversy over the Olympic boxers that we're not really sure whether what their gender is. And, you know, of course, the two boxers that are alleged to be male because they failed two gender tests have now proceeded in the Olympics to gold medal matches, and this is causing even more controversy. And and it's kind of just a weird story. And it seems that the tests that are in question, because the people who are suggesting that no, these are really females because that's the way that they grew up, they were assigned that at birth, and so, you know, forget the chromosome test, that doesn't matter because the agency that was taking those tests aren't reliable. I mean, to me, it just seems like, well, then have them take one by a facility that we all agree can do a chromosome test. But, you know, that's just me. So let's welcome in William Bach, who is a sports attorney, and he is an experienced litigator who is also the general counsel of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, and is also representing a lot of the female women who are for just having actual women in sports. So, Bill Bach, thanks so much for joining.
Jenna, so good to be with you this morning.
Yeah, so give us a little bit of background on this controversy, because I've seen, you know, kind of a lot of different information on the reliability of these tests, and people, you know, who are very convinced that these are just, you know, testosterone laden women, and that the chromosome test is unreliable. But then people who are saying, you know, no, there's an XY here, and so regardless of the rest of how the person presents, clearly they're male. So where do you see the truth of this controversy?
Well, I would sum it up by saying that the International Olympic Committee has hit a new low by sanctioning male violence against women and calling it sport. And that's what is happening here. The IOC realized months and months ago, over a year before the Olympic Games, that there were individuals who were understood by basic biological testing to be males that were going to seek to compete in the Paris Olympic Games. And the IOC, which had taken over boxing because the International Olympic Committee has some disputes with the International Boxing Federation, they had taken over that sport for purposes of the Olympic Games, and they absolutely failed to put into place any scientific testing, despite knowing about this issue for over a year. And so what you have are two individuals who are male. They have XY chromosomes. They almost certainly have a active SRY gene, which is the gene on the Y chromosome that creates testes. And they produce male levels of testosterone. And so if you know that there's been chromosome testing and somebody's an XY individual, then all you need to know is, do they produce male levels of testosterone? And there are only a few very, very rare genetic abnormalities that could cause somebody not to test or react to male levels of testosterone. That's clearly not happening here. You can, it's observable. You can tell that, and these athletes have actually been tested for high levels of testosterone. So these are males. There can be situations when a male, because of a missing hormone at birth, their testes don't descend, and they produce internally, they have testes, and they produce male levels of testosterone. They go through male puberty, and generally, when they go through male puberty, the testes do descend. The IOC is pursuing a political agenda when they're saying that there's any ambiguity about whether these individuals are male. It's just not true. And number two, this is a clear case of sports governance malpractice, where the IOC, for political reasons, sat on its hands and did nothing to put the appropriate rules in place to protect women.
And that does seem very clear. I'm speaking with Bill Bach, who is a sports attorney and was the general counsel of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. And so when you have a contact sport like boxing, I mean, we're not talking about playing chess or even, you know, individual events in gymnastics or, you know, something of that nature. I mean, you're talking about an opponent to these biological men that have a great risk of harm. I mean, we saw the one boxer quit after 46 seconds and just said, you know, I got hit the hardest I have in my life. Can this and should this raise questions about why there aren't these types of tests, knowing that you have these two individuals that are coming into this event that have been disqualified previously? But why wouldn't something as basic as those types of testing? I mean, my understanding is the IOC just said, well, whatever's on your passport or driver's license, you know, that's fine with us.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jenna. And not only are these contact sports, they're combat sports, and where people are actually trying to hurt each other, to hit each other in the face, and to have a male doing that to a female, it's really gross. And it's very dangerous. Frankly, everybody is very fortunate that somebody hasn't been seriously hurt. And it's where this gender ideology, unfortunately, is taking us. People are afraid or unwilling to do the right thing. And doing the right thing here is very, very easy. All it takes is a spit test to get chromosomes, and that was done here with these two athletes over a year ago, like I said, and then you can do a urine test to determine the testosterone level. So these are not tests that Olympic athletes are unfamiliar with. They're tested in these ways for basic drug testing. So it's a very inexpensive test. Many other international sports organizations, including World Athletics, so all the track and field athletes that you see at the Olympic Games, are going through that sort of testing, but not the boxers. Does that make any sense? It makes no sense. And the only reason it's happening that way is because it's the IOC in charge of boxing, and they aren't doing what they need to do to protect the athletes competing in that sport. And I think it's interesting, the IOC claims that the Olympic rules are to uphold values of fair sport that are in a document called the Olympic Charter. And the very first responsibility of the IOC and the Olympic Charter is, and I'm going to quote it, is to encourage and support the promotion of ethics and good governance in sport, and to dedicate its efforts to ensuring that in sport, the spirit of fair play prevails and violence is banned. That is the very first obligation of the International Olympic Committee and their own rules. And because of gender ideology, they're failing to do their first duty and protect fairness in sport and exclude violence. It's amazing.
And it's tragic. And I'm speaking with Bill Bach, who is a sports attorney. So what's in it for the IOC? I mean, why are they pursuing this type of queer theory policy? I mean, who governs them, or what incentives are they caving to?
You know, the IOC is the most political organization on the face of the planet. And the way you know that is every time there's a conflict or controversy about the way they're governing the games, they accuse everybody of playing politics with them. But they are they are a very political organization, and unfortunately, over 20 years ago, They gave in. They're one of the first organizations to kind of capitulate to the gender ideology madness that has that is raging in the United States. And interestingly, if you look in Europe, there's been a tremendous pullback on gender ideology because of science studies done by the public health services in a lot of European countries. There's a recent report that came out in England called the CAST report that that talks about the terrible violence and harm to young individuals who are being given surgery, being given cross-sex hormones, put on puberty blockers, and those things are very, very harmful to the health of children. They can make a boy or girl infertile for life. They change from the minute that sort of so-called therapy is started. It causes harmful physical effects, and it's not good emotionally. The outcomes for these boys and girls are very bad, and so they're pulling back from these sorts of treatments on anybody under the age of 21 in Europe. But the U.S. hasn't caught up, and the U.S. is not following the science, and the IOC is following a political agenda, and women and children are being hurt.
And it's absolutely terrible that women and children are being hurt. And so what is the potential remedy? I mean, for the boxers, for example, that were eliminated based on, I think, legitimate fear of serious injury, is there a litigation forum to enforce the code of ethics and the mission statement that you just read from the IOC?
You know, there is an arbitration remedy that is possible, but the arbitration body, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, receives most of its funding from the IOC. And so, you know, there are probably concerns that for a long time, and perhaps even in currently, the president of the Court of Arbitration for Sport was an IOC member. So the independence in this particular case of that body might be a concern. And so I would encourage athletes probably to just sue the IOC in domestic court. This is sporting fraud. This is supposed to be women's boxing. Athletes were induced to compete in the Olympic Games, told that they were competing in a women's boxing tournament, and the IOC has done nothing to enforce that standard. And it's irresponsible and negligent, beyond negligent. It's almost intentional harm to women. So I hope that somebody has the courage to sue the International Olympic Committee. They ought to be sued. This is, I believe, illegal conduct that they are engaging in by sanctioning violence against women.
Well, so could anyone on behalf of Team USA or anyone, you know, here who is concerned, like we have, you know, a lot of great Republican attorneys general or, you know, people like you that are a private litigator on behalf of sports figures for, you know, any of the women Team USA boxers, would they be able to at least challenge this on the rules, or do you have to have, you know, are all of the standing issues basically similar in terms of suing domestically, or where is Team USA in all of this?
Yeah, I think I've been a little disappointed that we haven't heard a statement from the USOPC, the US Olympic and Paralympic Committee. But as far as I know, they're in the 57 kilogram and 66 kilogram weight classes. I don't believe that we had any competitors that competed against these two males. So I don't know that there would be a cause of action available which would, of course, require harm or damages before you could sue. I don't know that that's been suffered by any U.S. athlete. So unfortunately, there may not be an option in U.S. courts. The next Olympic Games in 4 years are in Los Angeles. And And if this issue isn't cleared up by then, any athlete could take advantage potentially of U.S. courts to address this issue. And so I think it does give women's organizations a lot of leverage going forward to try to change this these practices. And I think it's also interesting and important to know and understand that there are international human rights standards at play here. And the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women and Girls, a woman by the name of Reem Al-Salam from the country of Jordan, she's actually taken on the Biden administration and their regulations and said that by allowing males to compete against women in sports in the United States, that the U.S. is out of compliance with a number of international human rights provisions, and that this is violence against women. So I think what the IOC has done is it's kind of crystallized this issue and brought a lot of attention to what's happening internationally.
And I hope that that has an effect, at least here in the United States, of getting people to understand that this is sanctioning violence in women's sports, and that hopefully there will be more support for the litigation, at least here within our own sports structures, to protect women in sports. So, Bill Bock, thanks so much, and thanks for the work that you're doing and standing for the truth on this issue. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So there is a new report from Real Clear Politics that puts the Secret Service yet again in hot water. And the headline here from their reporter is former Secret Service chief, we're talking about Kimberly Cheadle, wanted to destroy the cocaine evidence. You'll recall, it seems like a lot longer than just a year ago, because so much happens in the news cycle. But last, I believe it was July, when that packet of white powder was found in the West Wing, that led to evacuation of the White House, and then was ultimately tested and determined to be cocaine. And then the Secret Service conducted an investigation, came back and said, well, we don't know whose cocaine it is. And then it just sort of got swept under the rug in terms of the story. Now this new report from Real Clear Politics is inferring that the former Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle, because of her very close relationship with Joe Biden and the Biden family, had wanted to, before the story even broke, just destroy the evidence completely, not have any reports about it. And that would, of course, as well, destroy any potential DNA evidence. And this report also says that during the testing, there was a partial DNA match, and whether that pinpoints the exact individual or whether that is a pool of individuals based on just a partial DNA, we don't know. And of course, there was rampant speculation that this could have been Hunter Biden's crack in the West Wing of the White House, because although when it was found, The Biden family was off probably in Delaware, I think, you know, at the beach, and Biden wasn't doing much in the West Wing anyway. Hunter Biden had been in the White House as a visitor a couple of days prior for a few days. So there was a lot of speculation. But, you know, this coming, of course, as the Secret Service is still under fire for their failures of security. And my question is, you know, of course, with the assassination attempt of former President Trump and questions that are still outstanding, and it's amazing the mainstream media has basically moved on. But looking at Kamala Harris's rallies, she had an outdoor rally. And somehow that's okay, but the Secret Service is telling Donald Trump that, you know, you got to have everything indoors at clearly smaller venues than what you can have outside. I mean, there's just a lot that's going on here. So let's break this down with my next guest, Dr. David Grantham. And good morning. Thanks so much for joining. And, you know, what do you make of this report from Real Clear Politics and a potential cover up from the Secret Service?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jenna. I think it's breaking it down step by step here. The first thing that's important to me, the most important distinction, is who found it. And it was the uniformed division of the Secret Service. So for your listeners, you have the protective detail of the Secret Service that also does federal investigations around different sorts of fraud. And then you have the uniformed Secret Service, which are those individuals literally in uniforms that are outside patrolling and providing security, physical security, for the location. According to the report, that was the section that found the drugs. So that first tells me that it was likely in some sort of area where the public probably has access to. In other words, it probably wasn't found, you know, on the Oval Office desk. It was likely found somewhere where there's quote-unquote high traffic area. That's important because then I can understand the frustration with finding it and then trying to determine whose it might be. Now, I applaud whichever unit and person pushed back, if the report is correct, and saying, no, we're going to run this like a criminal investigation. There's illegal drugs. We need to confiscate. We need to run the proper search. We need to do the DNA testing, all that stuff, and we need to lock it up as evidence. I'm not sure what the calculus would be in just destroying the evidence, aside from it was found on the lawn that everyone, a million people walked by, and it would be just a pointless endeavor. And it was so small of an amount that you couldn't probably prosecute very well in that area, even if you did find somebody. So that's the only logical thing I can conceive of as to why they would want to immediately destroy that evidence.
Yeah, and is it weird, and I'm speaking with Dr. David Grantham, who's a senior fellow at the Center for a Secure and Free Society. Is it weird that we don't have any information about the DNA results, and even if it was a partial match, or like anything really that anyone has followed up? I mean, if Real Clear Politics and their reporter wasn't continuing to pursue this report and this story, I mean, this seems to be ancient history in terms of the Secret Service.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's strange or, you know, it's hard to tell. Did the reporter get the information, and what they were provided in terms of DNA was, you know, it's a partial match that doesn't do anything, doesn't go anywhere, and they decided to just forego that information, which seems itself to be critical information to reveal. So I do think the fact that it has not been, that critical piece of information has not been released itself is telling. But it could be just a matter of lazy reporting, for all we know. But it is curious as to why that piece of information could put a lot of minds at rest. But they've decided to withhold that for now.
Yeah, well, continued questions about the Secret Service and why they seem to be just failing in all kinds of ways at their job. But let's turn in the last few minutes that we have in the program to another top story, which is that Taylor Swift, yes, we're actually talking about Taylor Swift on the show, but trust me, there is news around this. Her Eras Tours shows in Austria, three of them were canceled starting yesterday because a terrorist attack was foiled, and authorities are tracing this back to ISIS and Al-Qaeda material found at the home of a second suspect. They have apparently two suspects, a 19-year-old Austrian and a second suspect, a 17-year-old Austrian, and they had ties to ISIS and were, according to reports, and I'm reading this from CBS News, clearly radicalized in the direction of the Islamic State and think that it is right to kill infidels. This is, you know, this just seems like continued heightened issues going on worldwide for something as, you know, pretty non-political. I mean, even though, you know, Taylor Swift has talked politics and some of those things, you know, domestically here in the United States, but, you know, for something of this kind of targeted attack, what do you make of this story?
Well, first, ISIS has traditionally gone after large-scale events. Let's make a distinction here. When you talk about ISIS and Al-Qaeda, one of the primary differences between the two, and yes, there are differences in jihadi ideology. And ISIS largely formed around the idea of having a controlled area, a physical territory. Al-Qaeda more thought of a global caliphate. So because of that, ISIS extends its reach, and it's also intends to do harm in the most bloody, scary way possible. They believe jihad should be carried out in a manner that strikes fear in the hearts of the infidels. So for that reason, ISIS targets big areas, big arenas. They attacked the concert hall in Moscow back in March, killing, I think, 150 or 160 people. So it is no surprise that ISIS would target the Taylor Swift concert, not for Taylor Swift, but for the fact that there was going to be thousands and thousands of people there. And you can, with all those people packed into one area, I think there was a plan to have a car bomb there. There were, some of these members were hired as security, so they would have had access to sensitive areas. They would have had access to people. If they would have been able to get weapons into controlled areas, they could have caused even more havoc inside the concert hall. So it's traditional, I don't mean to say that lightly, but it's traditional ISIS tactic to get as many people as you can in a confined space to cause as much carnage as possible.
And it's just such a terrible story. And thankfully, at least, the plot was thwarted and the shows, unfortunately, were canceled. And this is just the world that we live in. And so do you think that it was just targeting this because it's such a giant stadium and tour? Is it specifically that it was in Austria, do you think? Or was this just the first available opportunity? Or is there something specifically about Austria that we can connect to this story as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. Time's going to tell, obviously, with exactly what the calculus here, what the thinking was behind it. I would imagine that it didn't necessarily start with Austria. It probably began with where is the most likely or the best target for an ISIS attack. And from there, they probably narrowed in on Austria and the concert. Now, mind you, also, these people are radicalized online, as best we can tell so far. So therefore, it also probably came down to who was the most likely target of ISIS. And once ISIS radicalizes someone online, whether it's Austria, Germany, Italy, you know, Boston, Massachusetts, if they can radicalize you online, then from there, they would likely encourage you to find a local target. And that's probably how it transpired. Someone is radicalized online in a given area. They are either instructed by ISIS or on their own identify a viable target, and this one being the concert for Taylor Swift.
And so, you know, speaking just domestically and the security, you know, here in the United States, I mean, the DOJ does have a whole task force, and I don't know if that's actually the correct term for it, but basically a whole group that that looks at you know, terrorism at home and homegrown, you know, sort of people like this that may end up carrying out these types of terrorist plots, you know, here in the United States, with world events such that they are. Has the Biden DOJ really followed through with a lot of this? I mean, is there concern that, you know, some of these types of things and these types of threats could occur here domestically, especially with, you know, everything that's going on with the incompetency in the White House and a potential Kamala Harris administration?
Yes, my experience so far has been that the boots on the ground, the FBI, the DOJ prosecutors, they've been trying to intervene where they can in terms of radicalized individuals who are online. And this is one of those examples. The challenge right now, and this is really goes back to the Trump administration, the challenge right now is the online radicalization process takes on so many different forms. We're finding grievances that are overlapping. You could be anti-government and anti-Semitic. You could be a white supremacist who's also, you know, favors something that's not traditionally white supremacist ideology. We're finding grievances that are just really hard to manage, to predict where they may carry out an attack, because what you end up getting is individuals who have mixed grievances who then want to take out their anger on a subset that you weren't anticipating. That is becoming the challenge right now for law enforcement intelligence, is being able to first identify the potentially radicalized or the person that's going through that process, and then identify what exactly is motivating them, and then intervene, obviously, as quick as you can, but also trying to anticipate where an attack may come, because there isn't a traditional sense of these things. And ISIS is taking advantage of that, because they don't care necessarily if you hold an exact opinion of theirs so long as you carry out their wishes. So that is really the big struggle, and that's, regardless of administration, that has posed a challenge to law enforcement and the intelligence community.
Yeah, well, Dr. David Grantham, thanks so much for your insights this morning. Dr. David Grantham is a senior fellow for the Center for a Secure Free Society. You can find more about that at securefreesociety.org. And we just need to be praying, because there are a lot of things that we don't have confidence in a lot of our institutions, including currently the Secret Service, the DOJ, you know, some of these other things. And heading toward November, we need to pray for the future and the safety and the protection of our country and all of our people. And so I want to mention before we go that we are in the midst of the National Truth for Youth Bible Week here on AFR. So August 5th through 11th, help us give away thousands of free Bibles to young people across America as teens, especially as they return to school. Then you, as a parent, or if you are an auntie like me, if you're a grandparent, you can order a free Bible to give to your students to take with them to give to a friend. So there are two ways to order a free Bible. Visit TFY for truthforyouth.org. You can order online at any time or call 844-530-8890. That's 844-530-8890 or TFY.org. Help us get 60,000 Bibles into the hands of teens across the country August 5th through 11th. Thank you so much for your support for the truth of the Word of God. And so you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. Make it a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.